This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Monday the 9th of April. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Dean Arcuri. Tonight on the show, we're heading to the Gold Coast for the 2018 Commonwealth Games as we look at the pride of visibility. From when you see your girlfriend in the opening ceremony to the importance of creating a space on and off the sporting field where everyone can be included. We speak to one of the Commonwealth Games Federation's Chief Executive Officers about their decision to allow Laurel Hubbard to compete today in the women's weightlifting competition, amidst the Australian Federation's concerns that it may not be fair to allow a transgender woman to compete with a cisgender woman. And we look at what it means for an event like the Commonwealth Games to be inclusive and diverse, not just on the outside, but internally as well, and how that creates a greater, more inclusive culture, not only for the sport, but for the world.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Today, one of the most controversial moments of the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games took place when New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard took to the stage in the women's plus 90 kilograms category. Laurel is transgender, but some do not feel she's eligible to compete. In a leaked letter to the International Weightlifting Federation, Australian Weightlifting Federation CEO Michael Keelan expressed concerns on behalf of the organisation over the inclusion of trans weightlifter Laurel Hubbard in the 2018 Commonwealth Games. Mr. Keelan has expressed his and the Australian Federation's concern that the International Weightlifting Federation has relied on the International Olympic Committee's guidelines in relation to the eligibility of transgender athletes competing in this year's Commonwealth Games. As outlined in the leaked letter, the Australian Weightlifting Federation is calling for two things. First, that the International Weightlifting Federation draft and commit to its own set of rules regarding trans athletes, rather than simply adopting the guidelines of other organisations on an ad hoc basis. Second, Australia is saying that the Olympic Committee guidelines are just that, guidelines. It wants rules that take into account the specifics of weightlifting to ensure fair competition. Ian Muchamore spoke to David Grevenberg, the Commonwealth Games Federation Chief Executive Officer, about their decision to allow Laurel Hubbard to compete today in the women's weightlifting competition.
It was very clear is that, you know, we looked at this first, the sport rules. You know, what do the sport rules say? And, you know, are the sport eligibility rules grounded on, you know, the right conditions? Very clear that the sport of weightlifting is Laurel is eligible to compete. As simple as that. Now, if a sport wants to constructively discriminate against anyone, whether that's based on ability, sexual orientation, sexual identification, gender, age, there needs to be good evidence-based rationale. And so our position has really been threefold. One, you know, is there evidence and a position taken on safety? You know, would it be unsafe for the athlete to compete? That needs to be answered before they can constructively discriminate. Fairness. How do you prove fairness? On a sport-specific level, that needs to be reviewed and discussed if they wanted to discriminate. And then thirdly, can it be universally applied?
So how have you addressed these issues, especially the claim from the Australian Weightlifting Association that effectively Laurel was a man as a weightlifter in the past and that poses an unfair advantage?
We have absolutely respected Laurel's right to compete. She's eligible to compete, and we look forward to seeing her compete. And we, you know, beyond that, we said, you know, it's a sport-specific issue, and there are absolutely no evidence or no guidelines or rules that prevent Lowell from competing. And that's, so we've really put it that. But our description is that if a sport were to take that position, it's very much a sport-specific matter because of the rules and regulations of each sport in terms of eligibility. If it's based on fairness, if it's based on safety, if it's based on universality, you know, then we would have to look at that. But at this point in time, she has a right to achieve and aspire, to inspire, you know, through her participation in sport. And, you know, as I said, we've been very supportive of that, very consistent with Laurel's rights as an athlete. And, you know, we look forward to ultimately seeing her do very well.
And how long did it take to come to that decision?
It was very clear. As soon as we were asked, we responded. And, you know, and that was an immediate response. I have a bit of a vantage point from working for 16 years in Paralympic sport. And, you know, there's some great parallels, too, when you look at people's ability in terms of creating fair competition. If you were to rely on people's comfort or discomfort with disability, or discomfort or discomfort with people's sexual identification or sexual orientation, you know, that's so subjective and irrelevant to actually, you know, setting up good, fair criteria that protects people, that ensures that you have a fair playing field, and then, of course, can be universally applied across a number of nations. And so, you know, taking that, that's something that's not unique in terms of our approach, but we think it's a very good framework for making an assessment for legitimate and credible competition.
It does seem to be a progressive approach. Well, the experience in Australia when we've been looking at trans athletes has been that it's taken an extraordinary length of time. I'm thinking in particular of Hannah Mounsey in the AFL. And then the decision has been that they can't compete. Why do you think some organisations struggle with these issues, but the Games Federation seems to be able to deal with it as a matter of course?
I think it's, you know, I think what happens is people's level of comfort with the subject matter. And, you know, I think many times I've seen people's own prejudice get in the way of, you know, the character and personality of their federation and uplift and actually upholding the values and establishing the right culture within that federation to be able to objectively assess these types of questions. Taking a very non-emotive and ethical and moral approach to taking the balanced, you know, based on sound principles, you know, has certainly been the, I guess, the modus operandi of how I've worked, you know, as a sports administrator my entire career. And so people have rights and have the ability to exercise those rights. However, sport also has rules. And where the two meet, the two need to certainly, you know, ensure that they don't infringe on one another. And it's up to us as good sports administrators to ensure that, you know, we create the public discourse that people feel that it's fair, that people feel it's, you know, it's legitimate, it, you know, in terms of setting and meeting good ethical and moral and legal standards. And then ultimately that, you know, it's also transferable, that you can send it out and get it out. So, you know, people would say, oh, it's trailblazing or, you know, you're taking a fairly sound and provocative. You know, I'd just say that we're trying to deliver great sport for great people. And, you know, that's been our whole modus operandi. We want people to participate in sport. We want to find ways, but we also want sport to be legitimate and credible. And right now, the sport rules, you know, certainly don't have any grounds to, you know, actively discriminate or constructively discriminate against an athlete, transgender athlete, who's seeking to compete in weightlifting. So, you know, in this case, you know, we look forward to seeing Laurel compete as a great weightlifter.
That was Ian Muchamore speaking to David Gruvenberg, the Commonwealth Games Federation Chief Executive Officer, about their decision to allow Laurel Hubbard to compete today in the women's weightlifting competition. While the demands for clarity in the International Weightlifting Federation's rules around the eligibility of trans athletes might seem reasonable, it's important to highlight that the rest of the demands made in the leaked letter from Cleland on behalf of the Australian Weightlifting Federation reveal Australia's stance on the issues as transphobia. The letter goes on to demand that the International Weightlifting Federation provide compelling scientific evidence to substantiate the current claim that transgender weightlifters do not have an unfair advantage over female-born weightlifters. In the case that such evidence cannot be produced, Keelan suggests the International Federation consider alternative solutions. He cautions the International Wrestling Federation not to put efforts to be inclusive above the fairness in competition. If the current solution is to allow trans athletes to compete, presumably the alternative solution is to disqualify trans athletes from competing in weightlifting. Keelan finishes his letter by making the argument that weightlifting has always been a gender-specific sport, male and female, not a competition against individuals of various levels of testosterone. This statement, which reduces the gender of trans athletes to the level of testosterone in their bodies, shows that the Australian Weightlifting Federation may not accept the gender identities of trans athletes. It also calls into question whether Australia is currently prepared to accept trans athletes in the sport of weightlifting after all. The rules of the sport allow Laurel to play, and if people want to make a fuss about her eligibility to compete, it's unfair to her. Sorry about our country, Laurel. Unfortunately, Laurel had to pull out of the competition this afternoon after failing to lift the 127-kilogram weight on her second attempt due to injury. Ian Muchamore spoke to Alex Spence on the ground at the Commonwealth Games about Laurel's effort.
On her last attempt with the snatch, she attempted a Games record, and when she went up, her elbow didn't get dislocated, but she injured it, and so she couldn't compete for the clean and jerk.
And is she okay? So
she's okay. She's a little bit upset, but she just said that she was very proud of the way she competed, and she was also proud that she attempted the record. She also said that how impressed she was with the crowd and that they were all there behind her.
Weren't they lovely?
They were,
yeah. And I guess that's going to be her final major competition.
Well,
Let's see. But it was a big day.
It was a big day, and I think the crowd were amazing.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
A lot of work has been done to make this year's Commonwealth Games an inclusive and positive space for all competitors and attendees. From guidelines for gender-neutral language to a Pride House creating a safe space for the LGBTIQA+ communities. This kind of visibility makes all the difference. Or does it? In A Tale of Two Matthews, Ian Muchamore speaks to two former sportsmen at the Gold Coast Pride House who come at inclusivity and visibility for LGBTI athletes from two very different spaces during this year's Commonwealth Games.
Well, I mean, it is important for an athlete themselves to know that a Games is... Is it important to know? I mean, it's certainly encouraging to know that a Games is trying to go above and beyond to make you feel accepted and included and validated just for exactly who you are, which, you know, there are not a lot of other kinds of events which do that, you know. Well, sort of not in the sports world anyway. And sports can be a field where it can often be a not a very homo-tolerant queer-tolerant, LGBTI-tolerant a venue for people, unless you're actually in a specifically queer, you know, sports team. So there are a lot of athletes at the highest echelons of sport who probably feel very isolated, who feel like they're the only one, who feel like it might not be safe. So I'm sure there are a lot of closeted LGBTI elite athletes who are just gathering evidence to support whether or not it's going to be okay, it's going to be safe for them to come out as LGBTI. Because I certainly know that I was like that. And, you know, and we only have to look at the history of the Olympics, you know, in Beijing, out of 11,000 athletes, only 11 were openly LGBTI. So that's, you know, when you compare that to that percentage to the percentage of LGBTI in the wider community, which is generally seemed to be about 10% of the wider community is LGBTI, I mean, 11 out of 11,000 is like 1%. No, is 0.1%.
Did you feel back in Beijing that that was an inclusive environment, or has that changed as time has moved on?
Beijing, I was lucky in that I felt very held and supported for my sexuality from the wider community, so that my experience in the village and in the dive pool could be one where I could just focus on sport, and that my sexuality wasn't weighing on my shoulders, you know, that I wouldn't have to have this super awkward coming out experience after the games should I do very well.
Why is it important to have a cultural festival alongside the Commonwealth Games?
I don't know if it's important, but it's certainly a novelty. Like, it certainly makes the whole experience a lot more three-dimensional than just having a sports event. You know, you got sports and culture and art, you know, things which would generally be considered on opposite ends of the spectrum as far as, you know, entertainment goes. So to have the arts and cultural festival alongside and with the sports program means that, you know, you can go to a sporting event in the morning, and you can go to like an art show or a gallery in the evening, like things that are all, you know, they've been curated together, so they're not the same, but they've been curated so that they work alongside each other, which makes this a real experience. You know, it's it makes it a lot more of a three-dimensional experience.
The cultural centre they're talking about is Pride House Gold Coast, which opened last week with the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. Pride at International originated from the traditional hospitality house concept that are common at Olympic and Commonwealth Games. They're places to attend to support your country with like-minded others. Pride House Gold Coast is the first Pride House to ever be hosted in the Southern Hemisphere and has received overwhelming support from the community, and is being hosted at Rise Bar in Surfers Paradise until April 15th. It's a space where LGBTIQ plus individuals and their allies will be able to watch the Commonwealth Games with other like-minded individuals in a safe and inclusive environment, and is the first time ever that Australia has held a Pride House International. Ian Mutchamore spoke to Pride House organiser and former AFL player and LGBTI advocate Matt Hall about what he feels has changed in sport now that LGBTI people are out and open in sport.
I think it's important that we have LGBTI role models in the community, and one way of doing that is by having out, publicly out, LGBTI sportsmen and women. I think society has certainly evolved for the better since we've been able to support our LGBTI community comrades who have publicly come out. We've only got to look back at what it's like now for sporting people to come out, and it's certainly a lot more supportive, and it just promotes equality and diversity by having good, positive LGBTI sporting role models. And one way they can do that is by being commentators. We're now seeing on some of our biggest sports shows openly out athletes commentating. We've got Ian Thorpe commentating swimming. We've got Matthew Mitchum commentating diving. We've got Natalie Cook commentating the beach volleyball, which is all a fantastic outcome. That's positive LGBTI role models publicly out in the community.
What does good sportsmanship look like? And how does that reflect on our values and perhaps on our LGBTI values?
I think good sportsmanship is important because although they're all trying to win the gold, at the end of the day, being a good sport about where you, what position you finish in, as long as you abide by the rules and you show good sportsmanship, I think it's just as important as winning a gold medal. I think good sportsmanship is an important reflection on an individual's personality, and it shows a certain level of maturity and acceptance, and it's what we ask for in the LGBTI community all the time. We always seem to be, you know, always fighting for our human rights, and all we're asking for is a fair go, someone to judge us on our values and our principles, and not judge us on our sexuality.
Play the rules.
Play by the rules.
When we think about things like Pride House or the activities that we are focusing on, we often think about the human rights issues and about the challenges and the discrimination, but what about the sport?
I think sport in Australia just holds a place in our culture, and it's beyond reproach. It just seems to be up on a pedestal in the Australian psyche that sport is just, it's just so important to the community. And when you have openly gay LGBTI role models who come from a sporting background, it just helps get through to the community a message of awareness and education on LGBTI human rights. I think it's important that we look at the history of LGBTI sports people and those that have participated in sport. And if we look back in the history, we'll see that a lot of LGBTI athletes didn't come out while they were participating in their chosen sport. And most probably didn't because they were concerned of the community's perception or even their competitors' perception, because it doesn't fit the stereotype. You can't have a big, muscly, aggressive, macho male who is playing sport who also could be gay. That was a challenge to our Australian stereotype. And it's good to see now that we've challenged that and we've changed that.
That was Ian Muchamore from the Commonwealth Games speaking to retired diver Matthew Mitchum and LGBTI advocate Matthew Hall about inclusivity and visibility of LGBTI athletes.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Continuing to look at what it means for an event like the Commonwealth Games to be inclusive, Ian Muchamore now speaks to retired women's hockey player and BBC Wales journalist Beth Fisher, who he met at the opening ceremony when she was cheering on her girlfriend as she entered the stadium.
So I'm 35 now, so growing up in the UK we had something called Section 28. So when I was growing up in secondary school, there was not a word about LGBT, okay? So I also went to a girls' school, so girls' schools have the stigma of all being lesbians, which doesn't help. And growing up, obviously, we didn't have social media, or we didn't even have the internet, so there was no kind of Googling, like, I have fuzzy feelings for a girl, what does this mean? You know, I just thought I was just really liked, you know, I had a massive crush on, you know, my teacher, and, you know, I just thought, you know, and older girls, I just thought that was a kind of, like, normal. And sport for me, sport and me kind of go hand in hand, you know, apparently I was running before I could walk type of thing, and so growing up, I had this weird kind of, like, evolution. So I went to a girls' school, we're all lesbians, apparently. Obviously, I played hockey, and we're all lesbians, apparently. So I kind of, for a couple of years, didn't want to be the stereotype, go to a girls' school, be a hockey player, lesbian. So I kind of went out with a couple of boys, and obviously they didn't work. And ironically, my friends always say, even though I looked like a little boy, I always got the hottest boys. So I probably realised I was gay about 16 years old, but didn't tell any of I didn't tell my mum and family probably until I was about 22. So in those kind of years, I was kind of two different people. So on the pitch, I was myself. I was Beth, the hockey player, and that's where I kind of thrived. But off the pitch, I had this real battle. So a few people kind of... sport was really important to me because it was the only place where I could be myself. So on the hockey pitch, I was Beth, the hockey player, and I was me. But off the pitch, I was hiding. Yes. So the reason why it is so important, and again, and you've seen it in the news a lot, and especially, you know, I think with gay men in sport, is that, you know, to play your best self at sport on the pitch, you have to be your best self off it. And that means that everyone around you is important. So, you know, whether that's your friends and family, your governing body, your teammates, your coach, or, like we are now, the Commonwealth Games. So, for the Commonwealth Games to say they're inclusive is very important, because it means that athletes are not afraid to be themselves, whether that's wearing rainbow laces or, you know, holding their hands or kissing their boyfriend.
Which one is she?
I've always had this debate, does sport reflect society or does society reflect sport? And what I mean by that is, you know, if you take football, for example, there's still racism in 2018, which is just horrendous. You know, there's still anti-homophobia. So, you know, is sport a kind of hot pot of just a really bad kind of parts of society? But what I would say is, you know, sport is so important, and it does affect society and the way people behave. And I think it can then have a positive influence on a wider message. But, you know, in the UK, for example, there's no openly gay premiership footballer still, which in 2018 is just unbelievable, you know? And I think that says a lot. And the problem is, because there's no one who's come out as gay, it means that the first person who does, there'll be a for all. I think education is key. I think we need to tell our kids from the very moment they can understand anything, that actually being straight, being LGB and T and I and Q and all that, there's no issue. And I think it's so important. And I think, see, a sport has a place to play, but ultimately, you know, it's got to come from our education, because if they're not learning it in school and, you know, understanding about it, you know, if their parents are homophobic, where are they going to learn about it? And what happens if they are gay, you know, or trans or bisexual or lesbian, you know? And I just think it's important that sport obviously encourages that message, but ultimately it's got to be the education. And I think the only way society can change is that the next generation change, you know, and the only way we can do that is ensure that they are given the right messages.
The importance of diversity and inclusivity is something that David Grivenberg, Commonwealth Games Federation's Chief Executive Officer, is proud to be highlighting this year.
It comes down to respecting, protecting and promoting human rights. It comes down to recognising marginalised groups, resolving conflict and starting these journeys of reconciliation. So, you know, very much in terms of our focus with any of our games is to ensure that, you know, when you value people, you give them access and include them. You use the power that we have with these major events to build awareness, take advocacy positions on some of these points to, you know, uphold our vision and ultimately take action where possible. You know, I'd say Pride House is an example of our commitment in action. And, you know, also the fact that we actively promote and advocate for Pride House is something that's not by accident, it's by design. You know, so I think these are points that we've, you know, we try to bring awareness, you know, to the state of LGBTI plus within the Commonwealth, you know, and relations within the Commonwealth, and, you know, really have taken strides over the past several years to create some discourse, you know, on, you know, how do we move the dial and make sure that we have a truly accessible and inclusive, you know, event but movement for everyone. There's some huge, huge shifts since Glasgow, mm-hmm. where there was about 43 of the countries were in fact criminalizing homosexual activity. So there's been a shift, and we'd like to think that we've played a small part in putting it. You know, we orchestrated a kiss between two men in our opening ceremony in Glasgow, which, you know, brought awareness and really addressed this point. And we also flew the gay pride flag over Glasgow City Council during the game. So, you know, there's efforts that we have taken to really, I guess, throw down the gauntlet, so to speak, in terms of our commitment to creating an inclusive society. And, you know, we feel, you know, quite strongly. But also, I think it's important for nations to participate in these events, knowing, you know, our position in terms of inclusivity. The other thing, I forgot to mention, that in 2015, after Glasgow, we also had a major shift in the Federation, where sexual orientation was included in our anti-discriminatory language. For the very first time, it was implicit, but now it became explicit, and that was something that was quite important, because we had 71 nations and territories, our members, who signed up to and unanimously supported that anti-discriminatory language. So whilst their governments may not be moving with some of the times, certainly our sports movement is, and we need to all continue to build awareness, advocacy, and take meaningful action to create a more inclusive world.
That was retired women's hockey player and BBC Wales journalist Beth Fisher and David Grivenberg, the Commonwealth Games Federation Chief Executive Officer, discussing the importance of inclusivity at events such as the Commonwealth Games.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you the news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Dean Arcuri.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.